Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 873rd episode of Talking Metal. How are you? My name is Mark Striegel, and I got to tell you, we got a great guest on the show, Carl Kennedy, and the stories, man, Dio, Billy Sheehan, the Rods. I mean, they just go on and on. Carl's got some great new music out. He's going to tell us all about it. So let's get into the episode as soon as possible. But first, let's say thanks to the people who make this episode and every episode of Talking Metal possible. I'm talking about the patrons on Patreon. Guys like Tommy Anderson. Tommy, your t-shirt is on the way. It should arrive to you in Norway, hopefully sooner than later. Steven Saylor, thank you, Steven. I love texting with you, man, and I hope you're staying safe. You and your wife, I hope, are doing all right. Steven Rodriguez, Steve Hoker, my main dude over here in New Jersey, Steve Hoker. Just plain old Steven. We don't know his last name. Then Sam Soupy. Ron Keel, yes, that Ron Keel, Richard Langridge, Patrick Schwartzman, Mr. David S. Gray, Mike Jones, who has a beautiful greyhound dog, Mike Street, Metal Dan, Matt Carroll, Leo, I don't know your last name, I call him Leo from Alaska, but it's like Leo Sheban? You have to let me know, Leo, and I will get to your request soon, I promise. Kenny McCrimmon, John Bavari, Johan Enderstrom, Joe Ryan, Jeremy Weltman, Jean Francois Blas, Jay Vaninsky, Jason Seth, James Bennett, Gregory, no last name, Jerry from Long Island, Matt Rutz, Drake, Dan Gerwan, Chris Riley, Brad Dahl of Yarg Metal fame, and Anthony Mackey, Adam Marr. You guys all rock. Thank you. Great collection of supporters, and you guys are awesome. So here we go. Carl Kennedy coming right up for you, and some great music from his career.
Hi, I'm Mark Striegel, host and producer of this show since 2005. On this episode, we're going to talk some rock, some metal, and
anything else we feel like.
We're also going to jam some tunes, have a drink, and share some honest opinions. Thanks for listening to the Talking Metal Podcast. Let's get things started. Here's an old classic that sounds just as good today as it did when we were kids.
Up.
Widowmaker, 1985. What a bass playing solo on that. Of course, that's Billy Sheehan. Who else could pull that shit off, right? Widowmaker from 1985. Carl Kennedy on the drums on that one. That's off the Thrasher record. I guess Thrasher was like a project more than a band. And the album was called Burning at the Speed of Light, a lost metal classic, if you will. We're going to talk to Carl about that and much more in just a bit. But right now, we have to play some classic music by the Rods, right? Because Carl, of course, most known for his work with the Rods. Going way back to 1982, this is Violation, again, by the Rods, featuring Carl Kennedy on the drums.
We'll be right back.
right, we're going to continue celebrating Carl with a great interview from Carl in just a bit. But I did want to play a tune first, non-Carl related. All right, so let's do this. I have so many requests from you guys, and I'm going to get to all of them, I promise. But this goes out to Tommy over in Norway. He is a new, I think he was with us on Patreon, and then he left, and now he's back. I might be mixed up about that. I'm not sure, Tommy. But, man, you picked a great one. Stranger in a Strange Land. This is Iron Maiden for Tommy over in Norway. We'll be right back. a Little Maiden here on Talking Metal. Thank you so much to Tommy, who's over there in Norway supporting Talking Metal on Patreon. I'd love it if you guys supported us on Patreon. I'm talking to the people who currently don't support us on Patreon. If you can't do Patreon, you can always do a PayPal donation. We had John, what's John's last name? We had John Chandler recently hit us up with a PayPal donation. John, I appreciate that. Thank you. And yeah, you can find all the ways to support what I do on talkingrock.net. That's my website, talkingrock.net. Go there. There's Amazon links. You know, if you don't want to give a PayPal donation or join me on Patreon, you can always use our Amazon links to link through to Amazon, and then you go about your shopping. There's no markup or anything like that. It's just an additional step of going to my site, talkingrock.net, before you go over to Amazon. So I'd appreciate that. I'd love to have you read some of the articles we post on talkingrock.net. And the podcasts that we post there, there's a bunch of them. So, yeah, cool. Anyways, let's do this. Carl Kennedy has some great new music out, guys. And it is with his band, Kennedy. You can check them out at kennedyband.com. And you can also order the brand new record there. It's called Warrior. It is really good. I will say that when I interviewed Carl, I'd only heard the one song, Warrior, the title track. Since then, I've heard the whole album, and wow, it is amazing. We're going to start with a track off of that record, Not Even Love by Kennedy, brand new Kennedy, here on Talking Metal, followed by my interview with the man himself, Carl. I mean, if you don't know Carl, guys, this guy's legendary. I just sit there in awe doing interviews with him because he's got so many great stories, so much history. We're going to talk Overkill. I mean, you'll get a little bit of Metallica. You'll get Billy Sheehan. You get Ronnie James Dio, David Rocks, Feinstein, The Rods. There's so many great stories in this interview. One of my favorite interviews of the last few months, for sure. Here we go. Anyways, brand new Kennedy here on Talking Metal, followed by my interview with Carl Kennedy. This is Not Even Love. I think 2 or 3 years. Carl Kennedy, known for his work with the Rods, as well as many other bands and projects and stuff. And Carl, I just heard the new song Warrior by your solo project, solo band. Great stuff.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. I'm really proud of the album, and I appreciate your support. It's we took quite a while to write the album, and now that it's finally out, it's nice to get positive feedback, because you never know. You know how that goes. You spend a lot of time and kind of in a bubble, so it's nice to see it surface.
Yeah, great music video for that. And the album is now out, right?
It is. It's download only, but you can pre-order. So if you go to kennedyband.com, C-A-N-E-D-Y, or Sleazy Rider, which Sleazy has an S in it, you can pre-order the album, but you can pre-order it at kennedyband.com.
Awesome. Cool. And the album is Warrior, right? That's the name of the album.
That's the album. Mm-hmm.
Right. Cool. And we're going to play the title track off the record in just a bit here, guys, but let's talk about who joins you on this record. Some great sounding musicians. Let's start with a singer. Wow. What a voice.
Mike is phenomenal. Mike and Tony and Charlie have had a band for years called Totally Lost Cause. And Mike's the singer and was the singer in that band. And they would tell me about Mike, but I had no clue about how great he was, but he is fantastic. And he delivers live. He's not one of those guys who holds the mic out to the crowd for the chorus or the high parts. He can't sing. He can nail it.
Right.
So yeah, he's very talented. And Tony, we also have another, and Tony, the bass player, sings on Hellride and a couple of little spots as well, does backups. But Tony's got a killer voice, totally different from Mike's, but a great voice. So we're fortunate. We've got two lead singers, but Mike is just a phenomenal singer.
Absolutely. And where did you meet these guys?
Tony and I met Tony because he joined a band. I've been playing with a local band called the Jeffrey James Band for 22 years. And Tony joined the band about 6 years ago. So Tony came into the band, and Tony, we always laugh about it in the band because Tony, when he was young, he was a kid, he heard Black Sabbath. And then he went into a parallel music universe where he only listened to heavy music. And so in this cover band, we're like, hey, Tony, we're going to learn. He didn't know any material. He had never heard these artists. He didn't know any of the songs. And we would make a joke about, hey, we're going to do a song by this band. You probably never heard of the Beatles, because he literally just did not know anything that was pop. He just had great disdain for pop music and was only into really heavy stuff. So it's been a joke. But so playing with him, these guys were going to do a TV show, and I guess they'd been rehearsing, and the drummer was not able to really commit fully. So they asked me to come in to do the TV show, which I did. It went well. We just decided we would start writing some material, not really with an album in mind, just to start, went well. So let's write. We all like to do original material. And from that, we would go to a recording studio here, and once a week, as many times a month as we can on a Monday, and maybe two times a month, but we tried for all four. And over the course of a year and a half, we wound up writing the album.
Wow, that's amazing. And you said TV show. Were they starring in a TV show or scoring a TV show? What do you mean?
No, they were at a performance on a local TV show. And I think they were doing three songs. And so that's what I learned. And it went so well, that's how it happened. But they just they didn't have a drummer for the TV show. So I jumped in.
Cool. And Carl, when you say local, I know back in the day you were always, I believe, upstate New York when you were working with Anthrax and Overkill and producing all those great records. Where are you now? Are you still in that area?
I'm actually about an hour and 15 minutes south, and I'm in Carbondale, but I'm in the Scranton area. Kennedy is based in, Scranton. That's where I'm from.
Okay.
Cool.
So Pennsylvania.
Where we're located now, yeah. Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool. And once again, give us the website for Kanady. Where is the best place for people to find out about the band, buy the record, and or the at least the downloads and whatnot?
It's CANEDYband.com. And you can get all the info there, photos, lyrics, download the music. You can hear samples of the music and so on. Read quotes from other musicians. So.
Right on. Well, usually around this time of the interview, I ask you or whoever I'm interviewing, are you guys going to be doing any live dates coming up? But I guess we know because we're in the middle of this COVID-19 weirdness, hopefully past the middle of it, hopefully towards the end of it, at least praying. But do you envision once things are in the clear, like, I don't know, this fall or next year, that you'd be out playing shows with Kanady?
Absolutely. I mean, that's been the goal. We were able to play one show and it went well, but now we are kind of destined to sit tight. But we do have some big news to announce, and I can't announce it now, but it's in the works, and we're going to be doing a live virtual concert.
Oh,
so
cool.
We'll be doing an internet show, and we're very excited about that. So that's going to be up, coming up soon in the next, probably, I want to say the next 4 to 6 weeks, we'll be doing that.
Oh, okay, cool. That's awesome. And I suppose you'll put a press release out about that or something. Please let us know.
We will. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll the hosting party as well. We'll be putting it out. So people will definitely get the word out.
Very cool.
But it's exciting to at least know that we'll be able to get together and play. Now we're going to have to get together and put our masks on and go rehearse.
Cool. Well, we need that now. I mean, it's just without the live concerts out there, these, performances by bands on the internet are definitely helping us get through this. So thank you in advance for doing that. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome. Thank you though, because doing what you do, that's all there is now. And so it's more important than ever. So we thank you for the support.
Oh, you bet. I mean, I've been a fan of the Rods for many, many years and was excited to hear that you guys are working on a new record too. I think we're looking at what, 2021 release potentially?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And how far along are you guys with it?
I think we've been sorting through tracks, and we have, I think, two new originals. We're going to re-record two songs from our past, one that's a live song that we've never done a studio version of, and then another song that was on the Hollywood album, and we're looking at that as well. And so we're just basically going through and writing material now, so we're moving on.
Cool. And it is, believe it or not, it's 40 years since that I knew it as the self-titled Rods record, but I guess Rock Hard was originally released as Rock Hard. It's been 40 years since that record. Any
years.
Memories of that, of going into the studio, working on that record, anything you could share about that time?
Oh, absolutely. Mark, thanks for rubbing that in over and over. 40 years. I mean, there are people listening who are, weren't even born like 25 years ago. So, right. But anyway, it was an amazing time. I mean, it was something that I don't know that bands today get to experience, the camaraderie. We were in a band. We weren't in several projects like everybody now is in several projects, because each project or band gets to tour for a period of time, and then there's downtime for the rest of the year. So now, unless you happen to be, a major A-lister. So in this case, today, most musicians are in several bands or projects. Back then, it wasn't like that. You were in one band, you just played and played, and you did every gig you could. And that's how it was for us. And the camaraderie was great. And we went to the studio, and it was in Buffalo near Fredonia. And my friend Chris Bubach, who recorded the first Metallica, and it's gone on to have multi gold and platinum albums to his credit. But Chris was a student, so he would get free time. So we would play gigs, and then we would drive 6 hours, whatever it took, if Chris had one day of studio time. And usually it was at night, so we would hang around all day, and then at night we would go in and we would try to record. And it was tough, but we were living on $5 a day, and our bass player had to buy cigarettes out of that.
Wow.
So, you know, it was a very bare bones time. We all shared a room together with our road crew when we were on the road. But you know, we were close, and we, you know, we're all still close, and it was an experience that was bonding. And when we went to the studio, Billy Sheehan had been recording with these guys, and we didn't know Billy Sheehan. And I don't know if Talas was just forming then, but they were telling us about this bass player who played classical music on the bass. And we were like, what?
Yeah.
You know, we didn't know how to spell classical. So we were like, wow, that is really cool. And we're like, what? Somebody, you know, like a bass player playing classical music, kind of unheard of to us in the, you know, where we were coming from. And, but they're telling us about this guy, Billy Sheehan. The guy's phenomenal. Like, wow. So that was where I first heard about Billy. And of course, everything they said was true, that he was that amazing.
Yeah.
And later getting to work with him was just a thrill. He really is as talented, and he's as nice and down to earth as he is talented.
And what did you work with Billy on?
He did three tracks on the Thrasher album that Andrew Duck McDonald and I wrote and recorded. So he came in and played on three tracks, I think. Burning at the Speed of Light was one of them. Just has this guitar based dogfight in the middle that's just blazing riffs. And Duck was giving it everything. And so was Billy. It was remarkable stuff. So anyway, it was a great time. And a lot of times when we go to Fredonia, it'd be freezing cold and wind blowing. But we never thought of it as a problem. You know, we never looked at it, even though they were looking back at it now. If you said, here's $5, drive 6 hours, wait till 11 o'clock at night, set up and record for 4 hours. I would go, wow, really? Thanks. That's the coolest thing I've ever heard. I wouldn't think about things that way today. I would go, yeah, okay.
Right.
But back then, you know, we were absolutely thrilled. We were writing music that we were really happy about. And we just wanted to get it recorded, and you wanted to hear it coming back through the speakers. And so it was a thrilling time. And we'd only been together probably, I want to say, 3 to 6 months before we hit the studio.
Wow.
David and I, both being songwriters, we started putting together cover material, and we started writing original material. And that's how we went right to the studio. And then playing live while we were emptying clubs, it didn't really matter that we were slipping in one of our originals, because people were running to the door in terror and horror as it was. So they didn't want to hear us. And so it didn't matter if we played an original or two. And eventually we started getting people who would stay. And then pretty soon we started adding more and more originals until that's all we played. But it was an interesting time and a fun time.
And you mentioned David Rock Feinstein.
The Rock.
The Rock. Now, you guys, so he played with Elf, right? He was with Elf for a while?
Yes, he was with Elf for years with Ronnie and the guys.
Now, so did you know, like, were you familiar with Elf when you met David?
I was. David, I was in a band called Raw Meat, which had Dave Porter in it, Brian Miles, Joe Leo, Mark, and why can't I think of his last name? He's actually passed away. Great keyboard player. But Dave Porter was in that band. Dave Porter, his band, 805 with Frank Briggs on drums, phenomenal drummer. Check out the drum school. Frank Briggs, he's a phenomenal drummer. But 805 had a couple of, top 40 hits and on RCA.
Wow,
so Dave was in that band Raw Meat. So even though it had the world's crappiest name at the time, you know, but we played the circuit all the, you know, I think it was the tri-state, like I think we were four states we toured. And so we rehearsed, there was a finished garage, and then Elf rehearsed in the house. So we, you know, the bass player in our band lived with the guitarist in Elf. So yeah, so I knew the guys. So I used to go see them prior to that at high schools, and we go to high school dances, and when people actually danced at a high school dance, and when Elf played, everybody was on the floor, nobody danced, it was a concert. And so, you know, I knew the guys. And then Gary, the drummer in Elf, and Mark Nossif, they'd come out and watch me play with my band and with Raw Meat back then. And so we all knew each other, but Cool. And it was a great, that was a great time back then. You know, it was a lot of camaraderie as well with the bands, and the level of musicianship in upstate New York was amazing. And I think it all started from Elf and Ronnie. And, but you know, look at the bands, Manowar, Joe Inglis was playing with McCartney. There's so many great musicians from that area in central New York.
Absolutely. And was Ronnie James Dio, was he aware that the Rods were recording like back at that time? I mean, he would have been in Sabbath, I guess, in 1980. Were you in touch with him at that time?
You know, he and David were in touch somewhat. And yes, I remember reading something. I mean, we weren't like at that time, Ronnie was in LA. We were on the East Coast. And so our paths never crossed. And I did a festival in France, and Ronnie was performing in this trailer. But I didn't go bother him because there were a lot of people, and I hate bugging people. But other than that, you know, we really didn't see him until later on, you know, right toward the end when David would go to California and write with Ronnie. And there was talk at the time before Ronnie's death of doing an Elf reunion. They were in the process of working on material, and it's so sad that Ronnie's gone. He had a lot of things planned, and unfortunately, you know, like the old saying, life has a way of getting in the way of your plans. And
right on.
Unfortunately, that's what happened.
Wow.
So, but him coming in to sing on a song that I'd written, The Code, and Metal Will Never Die, you know,
yeah,
it was a career highlight for me because, you know, it was kind of Ronnie, Elf, that sound always in my DNA because, you know, I basically, you know, watched those guys when I was 17 or so. And then by the time I was 19, I was in Raw Meat and, you know, those guys playing around with those guys and doing different dates, sometimes sharing the same club. And so it was great to have him come in, and what a great guy.
And that was on, what album was that on? That was on
Vengeance.
Vengeance, mm-hmm. Right, Vengeance. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Vengeance. Yeah.
And yeah, Metal Will Never Die is on David's solo album, Bitten by the Beast.
Okay.
And, that's actually going to be re-released. And I know that it's been picked up by a major label. And I played drums on, and Nate Horton played one track as well, on this album that David had written called Hail and Farewell, that I think people are going to be blown away by when it's released. It's a great album. It's a tribute to Ronnie and his time with Ronnie. And
cool.
It's a great album. Killer tunes.
Awesome. Awesome. Very cool. And another album that has an anniversary this year, 35, believe it or not, your work with Overkill on Feel the Fire,
mm-hmm.
A very significant record. I think that history, especially in thrash metal, really, really remembers that record quite a bit. At least I do. I think great stuff. Any memories of going into the studio with the Overkill guys?
Yeah. I mean, those guys were, they were amazing. And of course that was the beginning of thrash, you know, that was the changing of the guard. And so, you know, Blitz was on 10, you know, there was no doubt that the minute you put a mic in front of him, he was a star. There was just no, you know, was very evident. You know, but Dee Dee was such a great player, and Rat's such a good guy. And, you know, they were all great players. And so then the music was really cool, and it was fun to work with them. We had to do it quickly, but I think it turned out to be a great album.
And when you produced them, was there like restructuring of the songs? Like what was your producing style with Overkill on that record?
With Overkill, it was very quick. So my role was very minor. And normally I try to spend a lot of time and make sure arrangements and tempos. In this case, I really didn't have a lot of input on arrangements for a couple of reasons. One was because of the timing, the length of time. We had very short, virtually no pre-production. And then secondly, because there was no reason for me to insinuate myself into the music because they had their shit together. It was ready to go. All, you know, my job then was to capture that energy and get it recorded.
Cool. And are you still nowadays producing bands too? I mean, you have so much new music that you're doing with Kennedy and the Rods. And last time we were talking with you about St. James. So I know you're producing a lot of your own music, but do you still have time to go into this studio and produce other artists?
I have worked with, it's actually, they're called Modern Ties now, but I produced Black Tie Stereo, which was their first EP. So I've done that. And then a year or so ago, I did a band Held Hostage with Joe Linterna singing vocals, and I produced that and a couple tracks for them, which actually was on the ballot for a Grammy nomination. So, you know, I still really do well. What I pick and choose, you know, what I want to do. I have another band project called the 450s, which, you know, won't be out until next year, but mixed by Jack Douglas and Chris Collier. But wow. So I just finished a drum track yesterday for Brad Sinsel and Bryn Ahrens from TKO and their different projects. So, and I have, you know, I'm doing tracks all the time, including my band from the 70s, Caulacus. We're still recording, and we'll probably have a full-length album at some point. So I stay busy. You know,
beyond busy. Wow, my head's spinning with how much stuff you got going on. What about St. James? Yeah. Are you still doing stuff with them?
St. James actually has morphed into the 450s. Bob and Jim, the two brothers, and then the singer from Young Turk, and then myself and Ryan Sandbrook, who's the keyboard player, who was the keyboard player for Young Turk as well. We've become the 450s and recorded an album in Miami over three sessions. So anyway, so those guys, you know, we have a new album with that. So those are the St. James guys. And I think we have at least another album's worth of material that we're going to re-release, St. James.
Wow.
And that was an interesting thing, that when it came time to assemble that, the guys are like, you realize that you played on every recording we've ever done? I'm like, no way. And I would hear stuff and I'd go, wow, that's a cool groove on that track. And they're like, yeah, that's you. I'm like, no way, it's not me. Because they were like Spinal Tap. They would bring in drummers and they would implode. They would just explode or implode. They never kept a drummer through a session. One guy was a gambling addict, brought a TV, had a TV next to his drum set while he was placing bets on the phone with his mother on games. So they feel like, okay, you might want to go home and you know, work with your bookie rather than here. Another drummer was just, he got so sick and I wound up having to do the whole drum track in like 2 hours, the whole album.
Wow.
Crimes of the Heart. So, but anyway, in terms of today, you know, staying busy, but you know, the focus is really for me now is I'm really proud of the album. I'm proud of the band, and it's an interesting thing to actually be part of a band, that can tour, and, you know, we have a new album out, and it's kind of fun for me in a way, because it's a different type of music than I've been doing. And it's also something I'm proud of. And it's kind of, and it's starting over. So I really like that. I like the challenge of that and you know, trying to get the word out, and it keeps things interesting for me.
Right on, Carl. Well, last question. As a young teenage boy, I remember going into the record stores in the town, a couple towns over actually from where I lived in the Chicago suburbs, and we just flipped through the metal section. And one album cover that always jumped out at us, and we eventually ended up buying strictly because of the album cover, was Let Them Eat Metal by The Rods. What a classic album cover. Kind of any stories you can share on that album cover?
I certainly can. Not that I should, but I certainly can. And by the way, Legions of Metal would have been this weekend were it not for the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
So the Rods were headlining Friday for the Legions of Metal. And then, of course, our good friends in Exciter were doing headlining Saturday night. So it was really, it's a shame.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, Let Them Eat Metal was my friend Sherry, who's on the cover. We're talking, of course, it's such a Spinal Tap album cover. But Sherry and I were talking, we're like, Let Them Eat Metal. And we're like, what can we concept it? And I go, hey, Sherry, you know, it'd be cool to have a woman with like a metallic dildo.
Right.
You know, like Let Them Eat Metal. Like the idea, you know, of course, it's crude and lewd and we're talking and we're joking around. And she says, I have one. Like, no way. So I'm like, you know, because back like now you can go to Adam and Eve and you can pretty much, you know, it could be something in, you know, my shape or whatever. You could build your own.
Right.
But back then, having some kind of shiny dildo like that or a vibrator, you know, I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. So anyway, that's how the idea came across and that, you know, came about, and she was all up for it. So I couldn't attend that photo shoot. We were playing or something, but she comes back and tells me the story, how the person who, Asif, I think is his name. It's Dana Merker, who's done a lot of Rod's photo shoots, a great photographer. Dana actually became part of that studio, and I believe Dana was there, but it was Asif, I think was his name, but he was quite elderly, and he was the photographer. And she said, so I show up, she had some bruises on her legs, and she had panties, and of course, she had a hole in them and didn't realize. And she goes, the guy's taking my picture. And I realized, and there was nothing I could do. And she said, it was just, and the poor guy, she goes, there's this old, kind of decrepit old man taking a photo cover. And, you know, so she said it was pretty wild. And for the poor guy, who was probably not thinking, poor guy, the guy was thinking, oh, pretty cool. You know, I'm still taking some cool shots here in my old age as I retire, because he was retiring and Dana was taking over.
Yeah, well, I have to tell you, it definitely, to a lot of teenage boys back in the 80s, like myself, that definitely, I don't know what the word was, made an impression on us. So, yeah, good stuff.
It was on the, Phil Donahue, the PMRC, remember all of that? The whole putting stickers out, right? So it was on Phil Donahue and holding it up as an example of, you know, what's killing America's youth. You know, it's, what am I trying to say? Corrupting, you know, America's youth, that cover. But, you know, it was cool. And if I'd been a little younger, I would have been happy to be corrupted by that.
Absolutely. We were all happy to be corrupted by the Rods, for sure. Thank you, Carl. I think this is my third time interviewing you over the past probably 10 years or so. And you always have such great stories, and it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And thank you for making new music for us and for all the music that you've given us through the years. And there's been a lot of it. And thanks so much.
Mark, thank you so much. And thanks for supporting the Kennedy album. Really appreciate it.
You bet. We're going to check it out right now. We're going to play the song Warrior, the title track off the Kennedy record, right now here on Talking Metal. I was a warrior. I fought the heavy metal walls until the grunge king came and shut my heavy metal doors. I made my sacrifice to Chrysalis and Mercury. All the gods and muses turned. A gifted band of men-at-arms, we pride Warrior by Kennedy here on Talking Metal. Thanks to Carl for joining us and talking with us and giving us another great interview. I appreciate it, Carl. And what should we do to take us out? One more request. I got so many of these things. Let's see. I'm going to do something selfish, which I shouldn't do because I know I owe you guys a bunch of requests that you've submitted to me, and I will get to those in a future episode. But I love this song. I just want to end with it. It's Enough by the band Level Fields here on Talking Metal. Again, that's Level Fields, two words. Check them out on your favorite streaming services. They're great. The song is called Enough. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next time.
The same.